I think it was Pericles who once said, just because you don't think about politics doesn't mean politics won't think about you. And I got to say, I do love politics. So it's great to go from broadcasting from the Western Governors Association, the only radio show broadcasting from their annual meeting, back to the studio where I can hit the button to pick up the VIP line and talk with my friend and Colorado Senator Cory Gardner. Good morning, Cory. It's been a while. How are you?
Good morning, Ross. I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, couldn't be better. A couple days in Vail talking to governors and the Secretary of the Interior on one topic that I'm going to talk to you about. But before we get to the BLM stuff, Space Command, what's the deal with that? Is that coming here? What's going on?
Well, four of the six final locations have been that have been identified are in Colorado. So that's Peterson Air Force Base, that's Schriever Air Force Base. Those are both down in Colorado Springs. That's Cheyenne Mountain Air Station. That's down in Colorado Springs. And the fourth one is Buckley in Aurora. So the other two are, I think, one's in California and one's in Alabama. So we're in a good position right now with four of the six. I've been told, I've talked to everybody about this because I'm leading the charge to have Space Command located in Colorado. I introduced General Raymond, who is the new leader, the combatant commander who will take over SpaceCom. He's already in Colorado Springs, so it makes perfect sense to have that there and not duplicate a mission set somewhere else. I've talked to the Secretary of Defense. I've talked to the President, the Vice President about this. So they're going to whittle this down in these conversations over the summer. The new Secretary of the Air Force, Barbara Barrett, who has been nominated, I've talked to her about how that decision will be made, and hopefully by the end of the fall, we'll see a Colorado name come forward.
And is Space Command definitely happening?
I believe Space Command is definitely happening. I think the question that is out there is Space Force. That's probably something that is going to wait a while as they determine how to move forward. But Space Command, you know, we already see a U.S. Air Force Space Command. So this will be U.S. Space Command. And I think that's exactly. I mean, we already have a combatant commander that has been a confirmation hearing. So, yes, it is going to happen. We're going to see how it works and where it's located. But we already have the mission set. So much of the mission set that Space Command does is already in Colorado, and it makes sense to not duplicate the kinds of systems in place that are already doing that work. So I think we're in good shape, but I'm going to continue to lead the charge.
Okay, and just very quickly, I understand what you meant, but I think it might have gone quickly past some listeners. Just very briefly explain the difference between Space Command and a potential Space Force.
Well, Space Force is sort of like the Marines, the Navy, the Air Force, the Army, and you would have then Space Force as a separate branch of the military. The U.S. Space Command, which is a separate combatant command, like we have NORTHCOM, SOUTHCOM, Central Command, those kinds of places, that's what Space Command is. So it would oversee the domain of space, so to speak, while the Space Force would actually be like a military unit like the Air Force or the Army within the Department of Defense at the Pentagon.
Very good. Okay, let's move on to the next thing. There's been talk from time to time about moving Bureau of Land Management, at least, and perhaps maybe even some other Department of Interior functions to the West. I know Colorado's trying to get some of that if there's some movement. The Secretary of the Interior was in Vail the past couple of days. One of the conversations that I didn't have with him, but some of my friends did, was about this. And he did talk about Grand Junction seems to be in the running. Denver seems to be in the running, although he wants to make sure that the mission itself is worth doing. What are you hearing?
Well, I just spoke to the Secretary yesterday as well. I was called him while he was in Colorado and had a good conversation again about the importance of moving BLM for the primary purpose of having better decision-making at the BLM. I mean, 99.9% of the 245 million acres the Bureau of Land Management oversees are located west of the Mississippi River. So it simply makes sense to put the directorate, the people in charge, where the land is, because I think you'll have better access to the communities for them, but also better decisions as a result. And so I think the Secretary fully understands that. I support Grand Junction. I think it makes sense. It's a public land county. 70% of Mesa County is public land, and so it has great airport access, has great interstate access, and it's close to Utah, relatively close to Wyoming and other BLM-based states. And so I'm confident that this is going to happen. I'm confident, I hope we can have an announcement this fall. You know, we've already been successful in moving parts of the USGS to Golden. A lot of people don't realize that, but we helped lead an effort to move the science to Golden, where they're building a new laboratory for the scientists there, and hopefully we'll see the rest of USGS. The director of USGS is a Coloradan, and so I think we're going to see a lot of good things come out of this.
Very good. And Secretary Bernhardt, as my listeners know from our conversation, and as you know, Corey is from Rifle, Colorado. Who knows? Maybe BLM will move to Rifle.
Well, you know, they've already ruled out Yuma, so Yuma's out, but maybe Rifle.
Oh, what's the point of being a senator if you can't get an office move to your hometown? All right. So among political partnerships, there's only one thing that I can think of recently that's as weird as Ted Cruz working with AOC, and that is you working with Elizabeth Warren. But you've but you've done it with the States Act, the States all capital letters, an acronym for something that I will, strengthening the 10th Amendment through entrusting states. Tell us about the States Act and tell us about its prognosis.
Yeah, you bet. So the States Act comes from this conflict in law that we have right now between the federal law and state law as we approach marijuana. I did not support the legalization of recreational marijuana when it happened in Colorado, but it did happen. It has more support now than it ever has before. It's not going to go away. And now we have $2 billion almost in cash every year in the industry that can't go into banks. It can't be brought into the financial systems and out of the shadows. And it is creating a big challenge. It's creating a challenge for banks and communities and law enforcement as we try to address this. So we need to change the status quo because it's unacceptable. Bill Barr, President Trump's attorney general, has testified to Congress saying the same thing. The status quo simply cannot stand. So the States Act that we introduced with Elizabeth Warren is a way to say, look, it's not about legalization, but it's about allowing states to move forward with the decision that they make. So it's federalism. This is what our founders envisioned when they set up our Constitution. Let the states move forward on so many different things that the federal government shouldn't be doing. And this is one of those areas where the state could make a decision to opt itself out of the federal prohibition, and that would take care of this conflict between federal and state law and allow the banking system to get involved and take this money out of the shadows.
Now, you and I talked about this a while back, and I'm sure there's plenty of politics going on here that I don't understand, and maybe Cocaine Mitch is part of the problem. But, dude, why not just deschedule marijuana?
So it's probably something that can't move out of the Senate. We're going to have to get 60 votes for this. So we have to overcome a filibuster because there are going to be people who, and I understand why, who are going to object to this. And so we're going to have to get 60 votes. I do not believe there are 60 votes in the Senate for descheduling at this point. And so this would do the same thing, though, basically on a states' rights decision by allowing states to no longer be subject to that schedule if they choose.
You think you've got 60 for this or that it wouldn't be filibustered?
We absolutely have 60 votes for it. So I do believe it will be filibustered because, like I said, there are going to be people who oppose it no matter what. But I do believe we have over 60 votes to pass this bill right now.
Well, is that like Tom Cotton's job now that Jeff Sessions is gone?
Yeah, I don't know if it's Tom Cotton, but, you know, you've got some very strong opinions, and I completely understand that. But that's why I'm willing to just say, hey, I'm not looking for a special deal out of the Senate procedure. Let's have a straight-up vote, 60 votes. Let's take it, and we'll pass it.
I'll just tell you, Corey, you don't need to respond to this, but someone just needs to hold up a big sign in some of these so-called conservatives with the word freedom on it and then maybe a copy of the Constitution and tell them anybody who would filibuster any of this is not a conservative, is not a constitutional conservative. All right, sorry, I got on my soapbox for a second.
This is your show, that's right.
Okay, let me ask you quickly about a couple of other things. President Trump came to an apparent deal with Mexico, and going into that, there was certainly a lot of talk, and it seemed kind of unease to a certain degree among Senate Republicans if this were to come up in the Senate. Do you think that the Senate would have voted to oppose those tariffs?
You know, it's hard to say. I think the Senate would have voted to oppose those tariffs, and here's why. Tariffs are a tax. And we had two studies come out, the Tax Foundation as well as the Wharton School of Business, that showed that a tariff increase on Mexico would have resulted in a reversal of the benefit from the tax cuts of 2017. And so the question would be, do you, the Republican majority of the United States Senate, support tax increases or not? And I believe the answer would be no. Look, the reason why I don't support tariffs, I think tariffs are a tax on American consumers. They're a distortion of markets. They're against our free market, my free market values. But I believe the president would do it. And that's why I was, outspoken against tariffs, because I don't support them.
I imagine that would be politically difficult. And I don't just mean for you, for any Republican, because Republicans, maybe a little less in the Senate than the House, but still standing pretty strong with Trump. And if this did end up coming to a vote, that would be one of the tougher votes, I think.
Well, you had 12 people who voted against the emergency declaration on the border security. And I would imagine those 12 people would have challenges with or problems with the tariff. And there were 8 more people that you would need then to overcome a veto on it. And I don't know that that would be that difficult, because tariffs are so despised by free market Republicans.
Yeah, I think you're right, although I doubt you'd probably get enough House Republicans to go along.
I see what you mean.
To override the veto. And that wasn't my original point. I mean, you answered my question. And I appreciate that. Okay, one last thing real quick. I'm curious, and this is just out of the blue for you. You had no idea I was going to ask you this, but I mentioned that Ted Cruz AOC thing. What's your gut reaction to a potential law or regulation that would say members of Congress can either never or not for a very long time become lobbyists?
Well, I am just glad that AOC and Ted Cruz have finally seen the light, because I actually have had that bill introduced for several Congresses now that would ban Congress members from becoming lobbyists for life. I've already on board with that. In fact, I teased Ted. I said, hey, why don't you and AOC just join my bill? somehow they have a little bit bigger platform and stage. So I was glad to see the action. It's something that I've long supported, and hopefully we can now get a little bit more momentum into its passage.
I got to say, I struggle with a little, because I completely understand the underlying idea and the revolving door, and it feels kind of dirty and a little corrupt in a way. And on the other hand, you know, if somebody hasn't committed a crime other than maybe serving in Congress, then why should we prevent them from holding whatever job they want to hold? It's tough in that way, isn't it?
Well, I think that's a big question, but we do have, private contracts where you sign up to non-compete agreements and those kinds of things. And when you voluntarily put yourself up for an election by the people, you're making a choice.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that. If you want to lobby, you can go and lobby. But if you choose to seek election and the people choose to elect you, then your choice has been made. You're not going to become a lobbyist afterwards.
Good answer. Cory Gardner, Colorado Senator, Republican, probably taking a little sigh that you don't have to run the NRSC anymore, a sigh of relief, I mean.
Well, there's nothing more former than a former chairman. So, I think we were able to expand a freedom-oriented majority, and I'll continue to fight for that.
Yeah, well, you did a great job with that in a very difficult election year. So you're to be congratulated on that. Cory, as always, thanks for your time, and look forward to having you on the show again.
Thanks for having me, Ross. Thank you.